Into your life. Daily, I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so that we all can enjoy a global loving community. And with that in mind, we search and we find things that bless your lives, and I am just absolutely thrilled and delighted to be introducing you shortly to Dr. Todd Michael. Get ready, folks. This gentleman, 20 years, is a MD, practiced a lot of that time in emergency, in trauma care, has written 9 books, is just doing some wonderful, wonderful work, has retired from some of his active practice in trauma care to working in rural Colorado as a good old plain GP doc. But what he's got to offer, get ready, it's so tied in with the Easter weekend. He had written a book, The Hidden Parables, in which he takes 30 of the parables of Jesus and does a translation of them from things that we might not be able to get from the normal translations. So there's just so much good to share. He did another book called The 12 Conditions of a Miracle, in which he directly takes the parable of the fishes, the loaves and the fishes, and expands it to teach us how to be able to manifest, to go from a small amount of supply and expand it. So get ready, ladies and gentlemen, for the perfect guest for your Easter weekend. Dr. Michael, are you there?
I sure am. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. I'm so glad that you can be with us. This is just a wonderful time. You've had such a diverse background. Of course, a person has to be pretty smart to be a medical doctor, and you've got, even credentials, not only as an MD, but as a psychologist, have a Mensa level intellect, and yet, just such an earthy person. I got to know, how did this all start with what you're doing?
Well, it started a long time ago when I was a rock musician, a piano player in a band. And I never thought about being a doctor, never thought about it at all. But in being a rock musician, I noticed that, I was 29 years old and I wasn't really getting anywhere, wasn't making any money, wasn't going to be, it was a hard life. You have to put your equipment together at 4 a.m. and load it into a van, and it was just a hard life, and you didn't make much money, and I was searching and praying inside. I was so confused. I didn't know what was happening. And inside, I was searching and asking and begging for an answer. And one night, I was driving home, and it was a terrible thunderstorm, and the conditions were really bad, and I was going about 80 miles an hour in an old Chevy, and I didn't have my seatbelt on. I hadn't put that on. And I started to fall asleep. And I started to do all those things that, you know, I don't know what you do, Ken, when you start to fall asleep.
I roll down the window and take my shoes off and start singing.
I tried that. I tried chewing gum, and I tried... By the way, my hint now is to stick an atomic fireball, one of those candies, in your mouth. It's really hard to fall asleep when you have an atomic fireball in your mouth. But that's neither here nor there. But I started to fall asleep, and I did drift off, and I remember I was swinging back and forth on the swing set at my old grade school in that hypnagogic state between sleep and wakefulness, and I was going deeper and deeper, going 80 miles an hour. You know, what's wrong with this picture? And the next thing that happened, a pair of hands grabbed me, one on each side of the face, and it lifted my head, and it said, "Wake up, Todd, now," very calmly. And I woke up, and about 50 feet in front of me, going 80 miles an hour, was a concrete bridge abutment. And I had just a millisecond to wrench the wheel to the left, and I missed that bridge abutment. It must have been by just inches. And I was saved from certain death. It would have been certain death.
Oh, sure.
You know, and I always... kind of want, just on a humorous note, I always wondered later, why didn't they wake me up back, you know, about a mile back down the road there? Why do they have to wait to the last second? They always have to be so dramatic about these things. But it was to show me something. It was to show me that my life was not necessarily in my hands. And, you know, I was so numb. I was just this young guy. I was just numb, and I didn't get it. And I pulled over to the side of the road, and I fell asleep because I was so tired. I was shaking. I was gasping for breath, but I was so damn tired that I fell asleep. And I woke up the next day, and I thought, well, something really weird happened to me. My life was saved, maybe by an angel, but I was so numb still, I just wanted to forget about it. But I couldn't, because it was like, you know, there's this kind of medicine called homeopathy, which I used to be a homeopath and still am to some degree. You administer a medicine to somebody, and it begins to peel away the layers of crud and stuff that's on the outside of your aura, layer by layer, until you get down to the center. And that happened to me. And over the period of 40 days, my entire life was dismantled piece by piece. My car died. It wasn't far from death to begin with. This girl that I loved disappeared forever. My job disintegrated, this, that, and the other. And on exactly the 40th day, my house burned to the ground, leaving nothing but a smoldering pit.
Mm.
You know, I hate when that happens. You know, I hate when that happens. And you know, even a dumb guy can get the message. Something needs to change. I didn't have anything left. My life was gone. And all I had was a book and a lamp and a sleeping bag, and this guy let me, it was the middle of the winter, it was February 4th. And he let me lie on the floor of his basement in the sleeping bag with a lamp. And I was searching, and just, what has happened to me? I felt like Job, you know, what have I done wrong? What have I done wrong to deserve this? My life is gone. And one night, I was sleeping, and about 3 in the morning, I awakened with a start. And I'd been dreaming something. I don't remember what it was. I couldn't recall it. It was one of those dreams that was elusive. but I felt like I'd been talking to somebody and having this really important conversation. And I'm lying there in the darkness, and all of a sudden, this rock musician has this epiphany that I'm going to go back to school and get straight A's in science and chemistry and organic chemistry and biochemistry, and I'm going to be a doctor, and I'm going to heal all these people.
Wow.
Well, that sounds good to, you know, that sounds good to a guy on the floor in a sleeping bag, but, you know, to everybody else that knew me, it was the dumbest thing they'd ever heard in your life. I mean, you have to understand, this was a guy that was a blue-collar laborer that had every weird job, like I was a mural painter and a yoga teacher and a vegetarian chef and a brakeman on the railroad and a switchyard foreman and a carpenter. And my favorite, by the way, was I was a cheese grinder in a pizza factory where I would just grind the, I'd grind up this cheese and it would end up in these vats and I'd take care of this assembly line where these people were lined up. And all I can say about these people was that they had a very poor teeth to tattoo ratio, shall we say. And, you know, I'm not talking down to them. I'm one of them. I'm there in this very low strata of humanity with no skills, no nothing. And so I decided I was going to be a doctor. It was impossible. My mother even told me, Todd, you can't do that. You've been in liberal arts. You haven't even graduated from college. You're 29. You got bad grades. And every course you took was a course in, like, film appreciation. Any course I took didn't have any numbers or any facts. It had only opinions, you know. I was really a bad student. And now I had to take chemistry and physics and really hard chemistry, really hard physics. I had to get a straight A in every course. And by a miracle, and I swear to you, it was a miracle. There are miracles. I made it. And I became a doctor. And I went to rural Kentucky. And I served in underserved areas about 50 miles from where Edgar Casey grew up.
Ooh.
And I started working in the emergency room to make a little extra money. I wasn't trained in emergency medicine, but I started working in it. And I started realizing I was working with a lot of people that were dying. And it started to add up. You know, at this point in my life, I've pronounced over 600 people dead. I have been with 600 people as they have died. And it does things to you. And after about the first 50, I started wondering, is there a soul? And it really hits you hard. And it's easy when you're sitting back and everything's going real good. Oh, yeah, there's a soul, sure. But when you're watching somebody torn apart and their family is devastated and there's little kids that have lost their mom, and you think about it, is there a soul? Where did it go? One minute this person was my patient and they were talking to me, and the next minute they're gone. Where did they go? And so I started doing something, and nobody told me to do it, and I didn't know to do it. I didn't know any better. I started talking to them, and I'd say things like, can I help you? Do you know what's happened to you?
Oh, this is after they've died.
After they've died.
Okay.
And I didn't hear anything back, you know, Ken. And I just kept doing it because it just didn't feel right not to do it, you know? I mean, they were my patient just a few minutes ago, and now where are they?
Yeah.
Where are they? And I kept doing it, and one of my hobbies is typing. I like to type things and write, and there's this little room, an emergency room doctors go to when they're resting, and they go in the back, and I had a laptop and a lamp and a bed, and that's about it. It wasn't much different from the sleeping bag and the lamp on the floor after my house burned down. I'm not sure I made a whole lot of progress. But I started typing. I started typing, and I would type these questions. I would say, Mrs. So-and-so, what does it feel like to be there? And I would look up sometimes, and like 50 minutes had gone by and I'd written 20 pages. I typed real fast. And I didn't think anything about it. I didn't show it to anybody. I thought I was just crazy. I just kind of ignored it. But this editor I was working with on another book accidentally received some through an email. And she said, "Where did you get this stuff?" And I wanted to lie to her. I was so embarrassed. She said, "Todd, this is the only decent stuff you've ever written. The rest of your stuff is just a bunch of crap." And wow. I thought, well, that's a nice compliment, I guess. But I put the conversations together into a book under a pen name. I mean, you can't be an emergency room doctor and write a book about talking to angels, because the angels were always there. No one ever dies when there are not angels present, and no one ever has anything go wrong. No one ever goes to hell. No one ever goes to purgatory. Nothing ever goes wrong. It's all perfect. It's all peaceful. And everyone is helped. And I wrote the book, and it's in its eighth printing now. It's called The Evolution Angel. It was a bestseller in Boulder for a while, and Tartar Penguin finally bought it, and they're going to publish it in hardcover. And that's how my story started. Sorry to be so long-winded, but that's the story.
Wow. That's fabulous. So there you were led at different times to going deeper into who you are and what you have to offer. And this evolution angel, boy, that sounds great. So that's a compilation of a lot of the conversations that you've had with these people.
Yeah, and basically I started asking them a lot of questions, really hard questions. They weren't Pollyanna questions. They were really hard questions like, what the hell is going on? Why did this mother die and there's 8 children that are orphans now? Why did you do that? There's no good reason for that. Why don't you explain to me why that is a good thing? And I don't know. Do you want to hear the answer they gave me?
Well, I don't know about the rest of my listeners. I want to know. Yes, please.
We can go to something else if you want.
Oh,
you want to know?
Are you kidding?
They told me that the kids had incarnated with the mother in another life, and that the mother was the baby in the other life, and that through some act of neglect, it wasn't purposeful, but they hadn't paid attention to the baby who was the mother in this life, and the baby got killed, and they felt so horrible that they decided it just scarred them for their whole life, and they never forgot about it. And finally, when they had all passed through the veil, they'd all lived their lives, and they'd all passed the veil, and they were all together, they decided, what are we going to do to make amends? Because higher beings don't just say they're sorry. They make amends. They do something. So they said, we're going to send the mom, you know, ahead, and she's going to be the oldest, and we're going to be the kids this time in this drama, in this contract, and we're going to have her die of cancer, because she did. She died of cancer, and she left them orphans, and now, are they paying attention to her? Yes, they're paying attention, and in the end, the story just keeps going. It doesn't stop. It goes on and on through life after life. In the end, the bond of love that they have created will be 100 times more than when they started. They have increased the love of the universe by going through this drama. And there was nothing bad about it. And there was nothing that happened to anybody. No one was a victim. They chose it. And they chose it knowing what they were doing. And it was all good. And when you take the veil away from any situation where I've watched all these people die of all this trauma, and you take the veil away and look at the mechanism of what's happening, it's all good. Nothing is going wrong. Ever.
Huh. Boy, there's a wake-up call. And ties in, and there was Christ being crucified on the cross in the most terrible way. And yet it comes out to the blessing to all of humanity. And you're saying it's not just about Christ on the cross, but each of these circumstances. What a revelation.
It's hard, though. And in all of my watching all these people die and be torn apart and just go through horrible things, knowing that they have chosen it, I'm just blown away by the courage, the spiritual aspiration of human beings to evolve and to increase the love in this universe is unbelievable. The things that they will go through to increase the love of the great plan, of, you know, the great plan that God has for us, it's unbelievable. It just blows your mind.
Wow. Are there other stories that you can share that help to illustrate that point? Because that's such an important point. Oftentimes, myself, I don't know about the rest of my listeners, I've been in judgment about things that didn't go well. And you're...
It's a bear. I do have another one. There was a friend of mine who was a lawyer, and he was one of the most brilliant men. He had an IQ of about 170. And the reason I tell you that is because it brings to bear on the impact of the story, how intelligent he was and how much he thought. And he developed Parkinson's. He was a very vigorous man, just really physical and, you know, a martial arts master. And when he was about 60 years old, he developed Parkinson's. And it was the most... He lived in Iowa. That's where I'm from. And the case was so aggressive that they took him up to the Mayo Clinic. And even the Mayo Clinic neurologist said, "We've never seen a case progress so aggressively, so horribly, so fast." Because he went from this very vigorous, vibrant man to a man that was totally paralyzed on his back in a nursing home in the space of about 8 months. And I want to talk to you about paralysis. I mean, he could swallow, he could blink, and that was about it. And he could breathe. He could breathe, swallow, and blink. But he couldn't do that really neat thing where he'd say, blink once for yes and twice for no, because it took him about 30 seconds to blink and you couldn't tell what he was saying. So he was cut off completely from humanity, totally on his back in the back room of some obscure nursing home for 3 years like that. Now the horror of that is so beyond my comprehension that I visited him, and 3 days after I visited him, he died. And I talked to him, and I had a conversation with him, and I said, "Paul, why in God's name would you have chosen that? Because either you were a victim, and this is just, you know, random thing, a horrible thing that happened, or it's all true that we choose our realities, all of it. And we don't choose some of it, and then part of it's random. It's either all or none." Einstein said, "The universe is either all random or it's all a miracle. It can't be half one and half the other." And he said, "I chose it." And I said, "Why in God's name would you choose to be totally paralyzed on your back for 3 years? Well, he reminded me. He was a transcendental meditator. And he loved reading about the Zen masters and the Zen stories. And there was a story of the Bodhisattva. It was a legend. I don't know if it's true or not, but Buddhism was invented or started in India. And this guy, one of the Bodhisattvas, one of the incarnations, his job was to take this candle flame, this light of consciousness, up over the Himalayas and into China, and to start with this little candle flame to start a fire and get Buddhism going in China. So he trekked up over the Himalayas, and he gets to the other side, and what does he do to start this fire? He picks this cliff that's about 300 feet tall, and he sat down in front of it and meditated. And he didn't turn around for 9 years. Now, did that make an impression? Oh, yeah, by the time he'd sat there for 9 years, there was a city that had been built around him, and Buddhism flourished. And Paul said, that was his name, he said, I didn't have the discipline to do it. And so I locked myself into this Parkinson's disease so that the only thing I could do was meditate for 3 years until I died. And that was my 300-foot wall that I couldn't turn around from. And he said, I made it. And now, he said, I'm a bodhisattva. It worked. And it's just, you know, there's so many stories like that. And it's just blown my mind. And a lot of me can't accept it, because when I have my own pain and the things I go through, I still whine and I still complain and I yell at God and I don't understand still. I'm not saying that I'm any kind of special person. I'm just a nerd like everybody else. But I've heard these stories and I perceive these things beyond the veil. And every time you take the veil away and look at this horrible stuff that's happening, it's all good. Nothing's going wrong.
And this is explained even in more depth with different stories in your book, Evolution Angel?
Yeah. A lot of it is about the nature of self-created reality and the paradoxes that are inherent in that way of thinking, because it sounds real nicey-nice, yeah, we create our own reality, but if that's so, why do all these terrible things happen to us? And the book is designed to address those paradoxes that, you know, sometimes get glossed over, and I think that was why it was so popular.
And I don't know if that's something that they can get from you or from Amazon. I see it here on this website, http://twelvecondition.com, 12conditions.com, HTTP spelled out. So that would be a good way to locate that.
Yeah, the best way to get the book is to go to booksurge.com, and you can order it, and they'll send it right to you. Booksurge.com. And I think Amazon owns it, and I guess you can get it from Amazon, too.
Okay, booksurge.com?
Booksurge.com, uh-huh. It's called Evolution Angel.
Oh, wow. Well, that's just so beautiful for us to be able to read more stories with the net goal of being more accepting of sometimes what we're in judgment about. Why is this happening? Especially, why me? That's an old favorite song of mine. And as I grow and the years go by, I'm starting to learn to be more accepting of what is.
Yeah.
You know that it's all part of a divine plan.
And it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so hard. When it's you, it's hard.
And here we are on this weekend when Jesus the Christ went through a terrible experience to call forth us to be resurrected. And it sounds like part of the resurrection for many of us this weekend, based on what you're sharing, would be to be resurrected into an acceptance of the things in our life that didn't go well, and to make peace with those things, knowing that there was a purpose that we may not know of yet, but that it all had a divine meaning.
And that maybe, you know, I guess if we, you know, in new thought, we accept the premise that we create our own reality, and like I say, not part of it, all of it, the good, the bad, all of it. If that's so, then Jesus chose to be crucified. He chose it for a reason. to show us that even that could be conquered, and that even if you're crucified in that horrible way that's worse than what you and I could ever imagine, worse than our little problems, he could still be resurrected and still come out of it and still be okay. And anybody that's listening, you've got some kind of problem, some kind of pain. I know you do. I'm a doctor and I listen all day. All day. All day I listen to pain. And everybody's got it. And whatever it is, it's a lesson that you chose. It's a beautiful lesson and you will conquer it. You will be okay. And it's all okay and there's nothing going wrong. Nothing evil behind it. There's nothing dark. It's all light.
Hmm. So would you say that for many people, one of the first steps to healing would be taking to heart what you've just shared, that there is not an evil force behind the things that go wrong in a person's life, or that they're not evil for the things that went wrong in their lives?
Well, you know, I don't hold myself out to be any kind of person that really should be, you know, above anybody or teaching down to anyone. I really don't. If you knew me and knew how spot I am, I would never say that. But I can tell you this, that in my experience, I've seen 120,000 patients in the last 20 years. I don't believe in darkness. There is no evil. I even wrote a whole article for that for Science of Mind magazine, the religious science publication. They published it a few months ago, disproving the concept of evil. Evil, it doesn't make any sense. It's like saying there's an order behind chaos. That's insane. It's all light. It's all good. There's only God, and nothing ever goes wrong or bad or evil, and there's no darkness behind any of your problems. They're all okay. They're all good. They're good things that are happening. They're painful, but they're okay. And there's no darkness to fear, ever.
Well, that's talk about a gift for Easter, to be able to hear that from you, Dr. Michael, who've put 20 years and dealt with, like you say, 120,000 people and have been there at the bedside with the 600 people when they passed. Obviously, you've walked a very vigorous path to be able to present this to us, and I feel blessed for what you're sharing. Thank you.
Well, I'm. It's a privilege to be on. I'm just, like I say, my life has become, there's a mission behind it now, and my only mission, I have a spiritual advisor who kicks my butt very regularly and needs to be kicked, and everybody should have one. And somebody
this
kicks
is a spiritual
his butt.
Butt kicking butt. You're referring to, huh?
A spiritual butt kicking, and I got one today. And my job is to, you know, so much of me was so narcissistic during a lot of my life. I'm 55 now, and up until I was about 35 or 40, everything revolved around me. And it wasn't really like a bad thing. It was just more survival. I mean, I could see with compassion that it wasn't a bad thing. All I was worried about was myself. It's like 100% of my energy was just worrying about my own butt. And now my mission that I've been told by my spiritual advisor is to have 100% of my energy revolve around everybody else except for me. And so you called me, you know, what, a half hour before this program? And I had something else to do, and it was with my son. And my mission was stop what I'm doing. It doesn't have anything to do with me. It has to do with this man who has this beautiful show, and stop what I'm doing and just do the show for him. And, you know, when I'm done, I'll try to have my life revolve around my son. And that's all I can do. And I don't know if it's enough. and I'm not very good at it, and it still revolves around me a lot of the time. But I can tell you this, that it's helped me. And if there's only one message that anybody ever gets from this program and from me, it's try to take your mind off yourself and put it on others. And your abundance, your prosperity will increase 1,000-fold the more you get your mind off yourself and the more you give to others. Give your money to other people. Give your time to other people. And your abundance will come back so magnified that you cannot possibly conceive it in anything, any dream that you can have. You can't conceive of it. It's in your best interest to give your time, your energy, your money, your thoughts, your prayers to other people, because you can only give to yourself. You can't give to anybody else. It automatically comes back. You can't stop it from coming back. And it comes back 10-fold, 100-fold, 1,000-fold. It's the law of the universe. And you can use it. And it's awesome. And just take my word for it and do it, and it'll really help you. That's all I care if you don't remember anything else I've said, is that that's true. And it's not something I thought of. It's something that my spiritual advisors have drilled into my hard head. Over and over, Todd, stop being so narcissistic. Get your mind off yourself and onto others, and your life will improve.
Well, there is a powerful statement being made there. Now, when you say that, one of the things that comes up in my curiosity, I think you made mention that, of course, the obvious type of giving, give some time, give some money. And yet, I think you'd made mention that a person can, no matter where they're at, they may not have time, they may not have much money, but for them to contemplate caring and giving, just to hold those thoughts in their mind and in their heart, that's a powerful thing that they can do right immediately. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, I mean, anywhere, anytime, if you just send a gift of light, you've taken your attention off yourself, and you're sending that light or that love or however you want to conceive it to someone else, and that works just as good as if you're giving them money. It doesn't have to be money. It doesn't matter what you're giving. It comes down to attention. Your focus of your intention needs to be on others. And that's what evolution is. Evolution is defined as follows. It is the higher someone is evolved, the less time they spend thinking about themselves and the more on others. And when you get to the point like Jesus Christ, where you have thought only about other people, in fact, his entire attention was on the well-being of the entire humanity. You become a miracle worker. It's automatic. And your miracles aren't delayed anymore. The water turns into wine instantaneously because your attention is automatically on other people. And that's the secret of miracles. And it's the secret of prosperity. And it's the secret of healing yourself of any disease and any pain and anything that you need to make better.
Wow. Now, when you made mention of that attention on others and loving, your second book, The 12 Conditions of a Miracle, is that right?
Yeah.
That, I guess, would be one of those 12 conditions, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when the standard translation of the miracle of the loaves and fishes looks like just a description that this guy goes out in the middle of the desert, and there's a bunch of hungry people, 5,000, it says not including women and children. Well, if there's the usual ratio of men and women at a metaphysical or spiritual event, that meant there was probably 20,000 women there, and 5,000 men that got dragged along by the women, you know?
Yeah.
And they're out there in the middle of nowhere, and they got nothing to eat, and it's getting dark, and he asked how much food is on hand, and they'd eaten everything. One little kid, this perfect omen, The little kid brings two fishes and five loaves up and hands them to him. And he blesses them and breaks them and starts passing them out. And one of the great things about the miracle is he didn't wait for it to expand into truckloads of food before he passed it out. He passed it out while it was still little loaves, and then it expanded. He took what he had on hand and used it to the maximum. And the big lesson, one of the lessons, one of the conditions of a miracle is that whatever it is you lack, whether that's health or money or prosperity, whatever it is, you've always got a little bit. God will never take 100% of it away from you. You've always got a little seed. And your job is to take that seed and use it to the maximum and to bless it and not curse it. And if you need a new car and you've got some crappy little teeny little Volkswagen 1958 thing that's falling apart, you don't curse it. You use it to the maximum. You change your attitude about it. It's all consciousness. And that will expand into a Cadillac if you want it to. There's so many lessons that when I retranslated the Greek translations are so pitiful. One word in Greek can mean, you know, for example, there are certain words in Greek that you can write almost an entire book on how much they mean. That they've been used by philosophers for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so the Greek language, which was chosen by the authors of the Gospels, and they chose Greek because it was a smart language, and the authors of the Gospels were smart people. They're really, really smart people. Those are beautifully written things, very tightly crafted. I've known teachers of literature that were atheists that made us study the Gospels because they were so beautifully crafted. They were so tight. They were so great. Well, they chose Greek. And one word in Greek can mean a lot of things. And when they translated that in the Middle Ages, and they'd come across this word that could mean maybe 10 different things, they'd choose the dumbest of all of the possible meanings, the most disempowering of all the ways to skew the translation so that it came out looking like, oh, this is just a description of what happened. The master did it, and you can't do it. But that doesn't make any sense, because Jesus was a teacher. I mean, duh. I mean, teaching 101 is that we teach other people, and everybody knows that it's better to, if a starving man, it's one thing to give him a fish, but it's a lot better to teach him how to fish, right?
Absolutely. Then he can feed himself every day.
Yeah, well, there was a corollary, if I can remember it. There was a homeless man told it to me on Pearl Street. He said, it's a good thing to take if there's a freezing man, it's one thing to give him a fire. That will make him warm for one day. But if you set a freezing man on fire, it will keep him warm the rest of his life. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm a bad, bad man. I shouldn't have said that.
Okay. If you're ever getting that inclination, folks, be sure to call a fireman to go along with. Do not do that alone.
I apologize. I'm a bad man. Here's this guy. He's got these hungry people, and he wants to give them a demonstration. What the translation shows is he was demonstrating how to do it. And he was showing if you set up these 12 conditions, conditions are just another word for cause. We're studying cause and effect. And if you have these causes set up, they're like the 12 combination of a lock, and that lock opens a door into another dimension where the laws of the universe can be different, and that which is impossible here may be possible there. And, you know, I was studying quantum physics, and there's a Scientific American, I believe it's May 2003, called Parallel Universes. And there's a statement in that that article, and it says that the universe is constantly splitting into new universes. And the point at which it splits, and you look it up, this is in Scientific American, not New Age Journal. It says the universe splits every time a conscious being makes a decision. So, and it also says that the laws in the new universe that have split off can be different than the laws of the parent universe. So that which was impossible in this universe could be possible there, and where it's impossible that two fishes and five loaves could feed 5,000 people, the guy just was a real good decision maker. He decided that it would be so, that they would be fed, and they were fed. His intent changed it. And we know from New Thought that it's all about personal intent and learning to get better at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been shown up in that movie. Some of my listeners may have seen What the Bleep Do We Know, or the new movie, The Secret, that helps, that kind of beckons us to take a look at more of being conscious about feeling grateful and being deliberate about taking dominion over our thoughts, not just letting brain on automatic pilot, but jumping in the driver's seat. And as Reverend Ike says, I'm telling my feelings how to feel.
Exactly. Well, why wouldn't there's that statement in What to Believe. It's a really important statement. The statement is this. The more you study the universe, the closer you get, the more powerful your particle accelerators, the farther you delve into the fabric of the universe, into the tinier, tinier, tinier particles and the laws that operate, the more you run up against a wall of mystery because it doesn't make any sense. And there are these things called the great quantum mysteries. And one of them is why human intent can tell a particle whether to manifest as a wave of light or as a piece of matter. No one has ever explained that. It is a quantum mystery. Well, why wouldn't someone like Jesus Christ or Buddha or any great enlightened person who had really perceived how the universe operates, surely they would have perceived these mysteries? And they're very important. And this one, that shows that human intent can alter the way matter manifests has to do with how we can heal ourselves of sickness, of poverty, of depression, of being alone, of anything. And, of course, he was privy to these. In my book, The Hidden Parables, I looked, where, if he knew about these, surely he tried to teach them. And in his parables, he taught 30 parables, and most of them don't make a damn bit of sense. If you read the traditional translation, they're goofy because the translations are dumb. He got to the third parable, and the disciple said, "Why are you teaching us in this new way?" And he said, "Because it is given to you to know the mysteries." So I looked through these parables, retranslated them, looking for evidence. Did he know about the quantum mysteries, like entanglement and non-locality and tunneling and things like that? And they're there. They're right there in the that's what the parables are about. They're about those mysteries. And he,
parables is a retranslation of the 30 of Christ's parables, of his stories? Wow.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay,
and the quantum mysteries are right there. It's obvious that he knew them. Of course he knew them. How could he not know them? Or Buddha, or like I say, any enlightened person that perceived the true nature of the universe would perceive this wall of mystery. Of course.
Oh.
But the problem was,
Michael, what a gift. What a gift that we can have for this time where coming in, it's whether in the Judaic tradition we have this Passover where people are being set free of bondage and stepping into going through the challenge of the fear of the Red Sea, of peril, and coming out the other side to make their way to the Promised Land, or with the resurrection of Christ, the end of at the end of great suffering, there can be an absolutely phenomenal resurrection into fabulously healthy living. And here you've graced us with some books, the Hidden Parables, where we can actually get a translation that's more personally empowering of these 30 parables of Christ. I mean, this is stunning. This book was given to me by a dear friend, and I'm going to dive into it this weekend as part of my Easter Passover celebration. This is just divine.
Can I tell you, can I confide something? It's very human about me, and it's about my own resurrection today.
Sure.
I told you about it earlier that 2 years ago I had a horrible accident, and my back was horribly injured, and they gave me two options. They said, you can either go to the Mayo Clinic and get a triple-level fusion and lie on your back for 9 months recovering, or you can take OxyContin and go about your business. Well, I can't lie on my back for 9 months. In that space of time, I could see 6,000 patients. I can't do that ethically. So I took the OxyContin, and it worked, and I could go about my business, and I got addicted to it. And a week ago, I went to my doctor, and I said, I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm addicted to it, and I can't be a drug addict. That's stupid. And so he was a really good doctor, and he constructed a regimen where they would taper me off, and one of my friends gave the medicine to me in a sequential manner. And as of today, I'm completely clean of that stuff. And I feel just fine. And I don't have any aftermath at all. I am clean, and I'm cured of this hideous addiction. And what can I tell you? I'm not any better than anybody else. I'm just a guy. And I got a couple of golden retrievers, and I have a Frisbee and a girlfriend, and I'm not anybody special at all. But if you read my books, there is some special stuff in there, and it's special because I think somebody higher than me helped write it. They must have, because a lot of my friends will look at me and they'll look at the books and they'll go, you didn't write those books, dude. You ain't that smart. And I'm like, well, thank you. That's a very nice compliment. I appreciate that.
Well,
but they're right.
To lift spirits.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, to me,
I'm just a regular dude, and after this program, I'm going to go play with my little boy and my golden retrievers, who are more highly evolved than I am because they have unconditional love. And I appreciate being on this program, Ken. It's really nice of you to have me on. Is there anything else I can add?
Dr. Michael, it is just a privilege. I want to invite people to go to the internet, to http://12conditions.com. That is spelled out, TWELVE conditions.com, to learn more about what you're doing, to check out some of your books, Evolution Angel, The Hidden Parable, The 12 Conditions of a Miracle. This, I think, is just a fabulous way for us to take heart in some of our lives and bring more love to the conditions that we have, where we may have been less pleased with what's going on, but to shine it in a different light of a resurrection in our own lives, which is what Christ wanted all of us to do. And when he said, I've done these miracles, these and greater, that you shall do. So I'm just honored for this special holiday, and especially with what you've shared, to tell each of my listeners and to tell you.
Let go of the God, let myself lose, and let go of the God.